This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
To this week's episode of your NWA Saturday special here at the Place to Be Wrestling Network and PlaceToBeNation.com. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscola. We have maybe the most fun show so far. Let me bring in my co-host, the doctor, Dr. G, Giorgio Bellino. You know, doctor, we have a very special show tonight.
Yes.
Because for the first time in NWA Saturday special history, we have a guest. And I have a feeling it will not be the last time we'll hear this gentleman's voice on our show in the future. So let's bring him in, and then we'll get into the topic. He not only is he currently – first of all, he's one of my favorite people on the planet. He always warms my heart when I talk to him. He is the co-purveyor of the brand new and shiny North-South podcast – connection podcast. Podcast connection. I don't ever get the words in order. We call it no-so. It's easier. But I love this guy more because he is an original. He was with me and Brad and JR from the beginning when we built this fucker from the ground up 7 years ago. And it's still flamethrowing today, and he has a lot to do with it. He is an alumnus of the Main Event, of a ton of other shows, and he has two of the best shows in our podcast family right now that debuted over on the No So Connection. Ladies and gentlemen, debuting on the NWA Saturday special, and this guy, his time is very precious, so the fact he's here is just as great. Yes, Chad Campbell. Hi, Chad.
Hey, Scott. Gee, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you. I'm glad to be the kids are put to bed and finally some peace and quiet here. So in the great wee hours of the night.
Yeah, it feels. We felt the later the better worked out for you.
Yes. Some comfort here.
Exactly. The great shows over on the No So feed. Of course, you and JR doing the Monday the Wrestling War Zone, which is always great. But particular tonight, I want to talk. We'll talk at the end of the show about your two podcasts on the feed because they kind of go in hand. Well, one of them does with what we're doing here on the Saturday special and some of the other pods, both on your. On the No So and here on the PTB Wrestling Network. But the reason you're on tonight is this week on the Saturday special, we're going to branch off and talk about, because we, as usual, the current NWA is on hiatus like everything else in this business right now. How weird is this, Chad? For someone like you and I and G and, you know, JR and a lot of us who are just wrestling junkies, how has this been for you? As a fan during this weird time of wrestling, like nothing's on. I mean, there's only so much empty and not a knock on WWE because I'm sure AEW is going to be stuck with it too. There's only so much empty arena stuff we could watch before it starts all looking the same. So how have you as a wrestling fan been able to like wrap your head around what's going on right now?
Yeah, it's been strange. So I watched WrestleMania and came to the conclusion that, after watching that I think I'm done with any empty arena until they get back up and running. Like, it's just I don't know, it just leaves me like feeling very hollow and something off no matter what they do. Them, AEW, Japan, no matter what I've watched, the empty arena just hasn't resonated hardly at all. And the contrast with that, you know, the other thing that's been gone is sports. And also, I know a lot of people have been watching a lot of old sports, and I haven't been able to really do that because knowing the outcome, you know, kind of throws it off a little bit for me on like real sports. But with baseball season not in swing currently, that's really opened up a lot of time. So in the evenings, you know, instead of in the summer, spring and summer, I usually split my time between baseball and watching pro wrestling. Now it's been exclusively pro wrestling. So like in the month of April, I've had an insane month where I'm probably on pace to watch about 300 matches just this month.
You are like an animal.
Like, it's been, just in the morning as I'm getting ready to telework, I've been throwing on one or two matches, and then usually at night I'm able to watch, about an hour and a half of stuff before I go to bed. So it's kind of been weird in that I'm completely, like, as far away from watching any of the current product in the past month than I can remember. But yet I'm watching more overall wrestling, period. So it's been a interesting contrast, I guess.
Gee, I don't think you've watched 300 matches this decade.
I watch a lot of the old stuff, but I agree with Chad. I did watch WrestleMania, but I haven't watched any of the empty arena stuff from any of the promotions myself. It's not the same. It's like, it's like we were chatting a little bit before we went on about the, the hidden gems, and some of them don't have the announcing on it, and even though it may be a good clip, it just is not the same without the announcer as well. It's the same thing for me watching it on TV without the crowd. It's just, there's something missing. You feel an emptiness that, I can't get into. It just seems, everything just seems the same. And you got to give the performers credit, because it's not easy. Part of being a professional wrestling is to try to get the crowd into it, play up to the crowd, and there's no crowd to play up to. And it's very hard when, even though, you have cameras, filming you, so you have an audience at home, but it's just not the same. So I think, like everybody else, we're just waiting for all the stuff to come back so we could feel whole again.
Yeah, no, I agree. After a while, it does get a little rough too, to not be able to see like a full crowd. So I've been watching. I love my two chronos. I'm watching one day. I have my timeline of everything going back to Chad when we were doing the network event, the original network adventure on the website. And I just kind of loaded out that. So I've been watching a ton of territory stuff, and kind of goes in line with our topic tonight. And then my other days, I've been watching strictly WWF like Attitude Era, pretty much from when JR and I were doing the written reviews on the website, which you guys have awesomely enveloped into the Wrestling Warzone pod over on the No-So, which is always awesome, and I enjoy listening to that a lot. I'm a few years ahead of you guys, but it's been fun to listen. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about we're going to go back to history again, but this time instead of a match or a show, we're going to talk about a promotion in the NWA kind of tree in history that I don't want to say gets forgotten, but when you talk about World Class, Mid-South, Mid-Atlantic, or, Georgia, Barnett, and Chad's backyard. This one kind of doesn't get remembered unless you're a Pritchard Mark, like my co-host. you don't hear a lot about this promotion anymore. But it should be given its due in history, as is the guy that ran it, because it made stars, and it was kind of a big help to other promotions. It was almost like a hub, if you will. We are talking about tonight the legacy of Houston wrestling, and that, of course, means we are talking about Mr. Paul Bosch. Now, Paul Bosch, of course, didn't run Houston forever. He picked up Houston in 1960. Let me make sure I get the year right. Early 1967. Houston was run by the Siegel family, Mara Siegel, and Paul Bosch, who was injured in the late 40s after being a wrestler for a while, had him as the first TV commentator, and did other stuff on TV. Of course, Houston Wrestling ended up on Channel 39, KHTV, which is now KIAH. And then when Morris Siegel died in December of 66, Siegel's widow bought the Gulf Athletic Club, which was kind of the incorporation name of the promotion, to Paul Bosch. And pretty much for the next 20 years, until he retired in 1987. And that show, that Paul Bosch Memorial Show, house show by the WWF, is on the network, and you can watch it. I think it's – the announcing crew is fucking horrendous. It's Pritchard – no knock to Pritchard. But it's Pritchard. I think it's Mike McGurk.
Mm-hmm, and, Mike McGurk.
who the – oh, and Duke Yeah,
Duke of Dorchester.
Yeah. He tells Mike McGurk to go bake him a cake.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, and then by 87, but for that 20-year stretch, Houston wrestling was a big hub in the Southwest area for a couple of interesting reasons. And the NWA YouTube channel, as of course they're trying to give us content since they're not doing powers or anything like that, and obviously they've indefinitely held up the Crockett Cup pay-per-view till something. So they've been giving us content. So one week, a few weeks ago, they posted a 90-minute, yeah, it was about an hour and 31 minutes, kind of like a montage. I wouldn't say it was a show. It was almost like a montage of Houston wrestling at its peak. And, gee, you and I were trying to figure out when it was. And I, based on who had a title, I kind of figured it out, so we'll go with that. I'm pretty sure it was sometime in mid-1980. The reason I say that is because Gino Hernandez was the Texas heavyweight champion. Now, he had two runs with it. He had it in 80, and he had it again in 84. But you could tell based on the commercials and the clothes people are wearing that it was 1980.
Yeah.
Plus, Harley was your your NWA champion. Of course, 84, Flair was. So this was definitely like spring, early summer of 1980 based on when Gino Hernandez had the Texas heavyweight title. So going into watching it, I know you grew up in Florida and you said you won. Did you ever, was Houston wrestling on where you?
No.
No?
No, it wasn't. The only reason, thing I knew a little bit about Houston wrestling, obviously, is the magazines. But when he just passed, when Joe Pedicino did that, what is it, Pro Wrestling This Week, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. It was out of Atlanta. But we, one of our UHF stations or whatever, carried it down in Florida when I was younger. And so I used to watch it. So, you know, they would go around all the territories. And I remember them talking a little bit about Houston. And don't forget, you know, towards the end of, towards the end of Houston combined with, or they used to promote with Watts for Mid-South. Obviously, during this time, I think they were working a little bit with World Class. But yeah, you know, the weirdest thing I think with Houston is they didn't have any titles. I mean, the Texas heavyweight title was defended, but really it was a world class title.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, Bosch was like I don't know, maybe Chad might know more, a little more about the promotion, but it was weird. It was just like, he was just Bosch was just a promoter, but he didn't have his own titles. It was kind of like it was a territory, but like you were saying, Scott, like a little bit of a pass through or
like a hub.
Attraction territory, you know,
right?
You had Andre used to go there. They would have the midget wrestling, and sometimes they would have feature women's matches. So, you know, but a lot of stars came through that territory.
Yeah, Chad, did you ever get it where you were? Well, you're younger than us, so by the time you watched it was probably gone. So.
Yeah, by the time that I started watching, one of my earliest wrestling memories is the big 8-hour Joe Pedicino, Bonnie Blackstone block that used to run in Atlanta in the late 80s, early 90s. Yes. But yeah, by that time, Houston was long gone, merged with or bought with WWF. And so it would be like your USWA, your Global, and then other smaller territories. Glow, I know, was a big one. And then they would actually show like Superstars during that block as well in Atlanta.
I think Pedicino was an owner in Global, I believe. I remember. I think
yes. Something about he was involved. Yep.
Yeah. So this block that NWA posted started off with like a TV. Like a news piece on Paul Bosch as a person, you know, what his life was. And of course he was in the war. He's from Brooklyn. So right up G's alley, although he didn't have much of an accent, probably from all the years he was in Houston, he kind of lost his Brooklyn accent, but you can hear it a little bit, but not like even your accent, Jay. It's not like that, but, and you know, talked about when he was in the war and he wrestled till the late 40s and then he got in a car accident. So he couldn't wrestle anymore. And, you know, he bought it from the Seagulls and then went from there. They had two matches on this card, on this block. Both 2 out of 3 falls, which might have hurt them. But one of them was Gino Hernandez, who was the Texas heavyweight champion. And as G mentioned, that was a Fritz belt. And he took on, what the hell was that guy's name again? No, I had it written down. I lost it. Was it
Psychedelico?
Psychedelico. In a 2 out of 3 falls, Gary Hart was Gino's manager, and Gino won it two falls to one. And then later in the show, we had superstar Billy Graham, who was kind of in between his WWF title run and when he would get the karate gimmick. So he had he kind of looks like Triple H now, except not obviously much more beefy, but he had this long, scraggly beard, no hair. He was gassed. At least when he was WWF champion in 77, he had at least a six pack. He looks like he was drinking Nandrolone in 1980. I mean, he was bloated like crazy, and he was wrestling a Mid-South standout guy in Tiger Conway Jr., who I've seen on a ton of Mid-Souths in 82 and 83. That was a 2 out of 3 falls. That match was a sloppy mess. I apologize, Chad, for making you have to watch that, because that match was a fucking shit show. But it was, the Sam Houston Coliseum crowd's hot. And that's one thing. It had that, it almost had that Mid-South Coliseum Memphis heat, kind of feeling, what were your thoughts, Chad, when you were watching both these matches? Bronco Lubitsch was your ref. That doesn't help matters either. The crowd definitely was up for it. I mean, you could definitely tell that they enjoyed their cards when they came into town.
Yeah, Bronco's always the ref on these matches, by the way. He's refs almost 90% of the matches in Houston. So, I think overall with the Houston wrestling footage, it was something I was not familiar with and grew up on, and kind of just thought it was an offshoot of Mid-South from the get-go, but with the NWA Classics on Demand that they had a few years ago, it really started getting fleshed out. So there was a ton of footage released with that was previously unearthed, and a lot of great matches too. There's an Andre the Giant versus Harley Race match that's excellent from that. So of these two matches, the Psychedelico versus Gino match was released on that service, and I have the date on both of those matches. So the you were correct, Scott. The Psychedelico Gino match was on May the 9th, and then the Superstar Billy Graham Tiger Conway match was a week later on 5/16. And the show they were promoting throughout this show that Bosch kept throwing the interviews over was June 22nd. So that'll be the show. But just starting with the Psychedelico versus Gino match, I actually thought it was a pretty good match, actually. Fair. And I thought Psychedelico is an interesting guy because he's the brother, legit brother, of Mil Máscaras and Dos Caras. But there's not hardly any footage of him. He's certainly the lesser of those three as far as notoriety or footage. He was right when AAA was established in 1992-1993. He was in that promotion and had a couple of trios matches that had made tape, but besides that, that's the only time I'd seen him. And his son, Psychedelico Jr., is also kind of one of those pilgrimage-type wrestlers where he had a cup of coffee in Florida Championship Wrestling in 2009, but I think only had one or two matches that made Florida Championship Wrestling TV. He had a weird six-match run in Chikara, but also is... Oh, wow. He's also someone that's kind of been a journeyman type wrestler. So I was interested to see how Psychedelico worked. And Gino is someone I know you spoke before we started recording, Scott, and how you've enjoyed Gino in your watch. And I think Gino, to me, of all the younger wrestlers that died in the 80s, I think Gino probably had the highest ceiling, even above guys like Jay Youngblood or David Von Erich, to me. Like, I just think Gino was a fantastic character and also somebody that could wrestle. So I enjoyed the first match for what it was. I thought the first fall had a lot of kind of lucha aspects that were interesting. And I think that's one of the unique things about Houston wrestling is it was really a great hybrid where you saw a lot of different styles on display that you might not necessarily see in some of the other territories. Like Bosch was not shy in bringing in all different sorts of talent. So you'd have a lot of the women wrestling matches. You'd have a lot of the midget wrestling matches. You would have a lot of lucha stars and even somebody like Psychedelico and Mascaris that did some of the more lucha chain wrestling. But, you know, one of the top stars in Houston is Jose Lothario around this time. And he does a lot of kind of like lucha brawling type style. So it was very unique. I thought the worst part of the match was by far the finish, which I didn't quite understand. I think actually Gino ended up getting DQ'd, but it was a real weak DQ where he just didn't do a clean break. And I was thinking, oh, well, that was setting up maybe a rematch between these guys later, but they never had a rematch. And as you saw in the clip, Mark Lewin ran in and kind of had a big pull apart as he attacked Gary Hart and Gino Hernandez. And that was Gino's big feud at the time. He, the week after that 516 show, Gino fights Mark Lewin actually in the main event. It was the match that went on after the Billy Graham versus Tiger Conway match.
Where can we get that one?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, that match is was available on Classics, and it's a very good match, I think. But Gary Hart's in the shark cage for that one, and then they ended up having a Texas Death match a few weeks later, and that one has not made tape. So that was his main feud. So, this just felt like kind of a one-off match that in a lot of ways was to advance the Gino-Mark Lewin feud. But, overall, I thought it was an interesting look to see. I mean, I think you could get glimpses of what made Gino such a hot prospect at the time. And, like I said, it was interesting just to see Psychedelico, because for somebody that's part of such a prestigious wrestling family, there's just not much footage at all of him out there.
And, you know, I think with Bosch, like you were mentioning, in bringing in different kinds of talent, Bosch also paid pretty well. He was kind of like known as a good paying promoter, like Don Owen in the Pacific Northwest. So he was able to get a lot of these guys. Like I said, you know, Andre would always come through there. You know, a lot of the Mid-South stars came through there. You know, Junkyard Dog, Junkyard Dog was really hot down south back in the 80s. And Gino Hernandez, I mean, you could see it here. He was young here, but you could see him being a big star. I mean, I definitely think, you know, had he not passed, he would have definitely gone on to WWE and probably been a great heel. You know, maybe even like a Million Dollar Man kind of character. I mean, he just had that. He was just a great cocky heel, you know, basic old school heel that you're looking for. And it's a shame that we lost him that young, because I think we could have definitely seen a heel that probably would have, you know, probably would have wrestled for, you know, another 20 years after that.
I agree. It's a shame. That's a tough one. I was talking to somebody today at work on a side note about all the Dark Side of the Rings. That one always bothers me the most. The one they did last year, the last season on Gino Hernandez. That's a tough one. Before we get back to the matches, I want to talk about Paul Bosch for a minute, because I feel like, and maybe it's just because he didn't have a ton of ground he had to cover, but, and I've never watched an episode of like an AWA or a Mid-South locally. I mean, we're watching them on the network with no commercials, but I feel like Paul Bosch was the best at connecting with the community. Like, Here's the thing for me, and I always laugh at this. When I'm watching all of these shows, whether it's Mid-Atlantic, Mid-South, World Class, they all were proud of their TV, but – and I may be a little harsh, and maybe, Chad, you could back me up on this or counter my point because G thinks I'm a little harsh. But some of these guys, like Bill Watts, like he fumbles when he talks. Fritz fumbles when he talks. Like, these guys were all apparently big TV – you know, stars and to go with wrestling, and they barely cut a decent promo as better than, not nearly as good as the guys in the promotion. Paul Bosch seemed to have this natural, and maybe it's the Brooklyn thing, this natural charisma. Vern is close, but Vern probably didn't do a ton of commercials because he was covering, you know, probably six states and a decent hunk of Canada. But Paul Bosch literally was in every fucking commercial on this show, whether he's selling aluminum siding or mobile homes or stereos or God knows what else. Sausage guy. Yeah. Literally every commercial, he had that big fucking ring on and he was in every friggin' commercial. So I feel like, Chad, that unlike some of the other promoters, maybe Paul Bosch was the closest to the community. Like, he was a community guy, not just a wrestling promoter you saw from afar. Like, it felt like he connected with the community of Houston, maybe more so than some other promoters did in some other areas.
Yeah, well, I think the comparison to Don Owen was accurate that G said, and I think what helped Bosch to get over that appeal was what you were talking about, Scott. And just, I mean, if you look at the reach that he had syndication wise. It really was just Houston and the Houston metro area for the most part, because even if you stretch to Dallas, well, they were getting World Class. So that was a completely different territory. Amarillo still had their own thing going on at this time. And then and on the other side, you were getting to the Mid-South territory and they were getting their TV. So he was kind of really honed in on his thing. Like, even, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, or like you said with Vern, I mean, he had a wide reach of his syndication. But even something like Georgia Championship Wrestling or Florida Championship Wrestling, that may just be one state, but there's a big difference between like the Florida Panhandle and Miami, for instance, and even like in Georgia from Atlanta Metro to Savannah, or some of the other areas like Tom Bell in Augusta, Georgia, had his own kind of promotion he promoted the Tuesday night shows there. So it was really a one-man show with Bosch, but I think he did do a good job of bringing in that community feel with the commercials you had and also with the piece they started this program with. I actually think, and I want to know, but it felt like to me this would have been a show that they would have run. Like, this felt like one of their TV shows that they would run. So I think it was unedited, besides the NWA merch promo we got. I think it was an unedited TV show.
I think you're right.
That would have aired the Saturday and Sunday of that June 22nd card.
Yeah. No, so, I think you're right. Yeah,
because if you take away the NWA merch stuff, you're right at an hour and a half, which feels like their runtime. I think this gave you a great feel of that.
I agree. I think that the one thing I was telling, I was saying, I wanted to talk a little bit about tonight and see what you guys think is that the announcing. Like, I can't stand when it's just one guy announcing. I love the two man booth. I'm not really big on the three man booth, but I love the two man booth. For a wrestling match, like, you know, I think some of it, I think it was Bosch in the first match, and then what was it?
Boyd Pierce.
Peter Burkholz. Yeah, it was Peter Burkholz, who is Bosch's nephew, and he helped run the office as well.
Oh, okay. It sounded like
a new Boyd Pierce. Also, that's the guy that supposedly held up Vince for more money with the with the last show, you know, the tribute show. So yeah, that's okay. That's, I didn't realize that was him, but yeah. So it was. I just think I could have enjoyed the matches a little bit better if there was a color commentator. But
But I guess that's just the way they did it.
I think, I think single commentator is an acquired taste, certainly. I'm probably, I guess, more accustomed to it just from the solo MSG Vince stuff and then the Bosch stuff I'd watched previously. So I was kind of familiar with Bosch's cadence, and I definitely think he calls the action in a different way. I mean, like on the NWA stuff that, or the Mid-Atlantic stuff that Scott's watching, like you have David Crockett losing his mind, and with both Florida and Georgia, certainly Soli announces in a different manner from this. But Bosch has his own style, and it can take, certainly can have a learning curve of how quickly you can get used to it, and then at the end you may still not have it as your preferred style. I mean, it's not my favorite commentary by any means, but I am used to it by now.
Because Soli used to do some by himself, like if they did any shows, if they ever showed like clips when I used to watch Championship Wrestling from Florida, you know, they were from the Lakeland Civic Center or whatever. Sometimes he'd be announcing by himself. So it's not like it's not unprecedented for me. I just, like you said, it's a preference.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the thing is with those shows, like Scott was saying, with Bosch being a part of in those commercials, well, you know, he had to be a sales guy. That was where he was making his money because, again, it wasn't a true, like you're saying, a true territory. I think he was always promoting his TV to build up to a big card, you know, whether it be at the Sam Houston Coliseum, you know, just to build up those big cards all the time, which is basically all the territories were doing. But for him specifically, because, would Houston be considered a territory? Was it a territory? Do you really need to have titles to be considered territory?
That's a good question.
I think I would, and I think I liken it to Portland, because Portland would have the six-man titles. I mean, they would have some titles, but they ran the same rotation where if the NWA World Champion was coming in, they would put them up against whoever, like a young Rick Martel in 1980, who barely speaks English because from his Quebec-ness. So, you know, like that's something that would happen when Harley Race came in there, and they would utilize Andre as the special attraction as well. So I think I would consider Houston a territory, but it is just a different approach in how they, like, it certainly felt like a territory that, I mean, as you saw with the other territories and individuals wanting to slowly start expanding their reach, Bosch always felt like he was comfortable just kind of being the master of Houston, you know, like he was just comfortable in that area and just having partnerships with other promotions.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. It's not like, I mean, you could sort of compare it with, say, St. Louis, like Mushnick. I mean, I guess the Central States title was their belt, I suppose.
Yeah.
It wasn't really like a St. Louis heavyweight champion, but I guess the Central States
Missouri.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, they would use the Missouri. That would be title. Their closest. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask
that
you,
that was the stepping stone. The Missouri title was the stepping stone to the NWA World Championship.
Mushnick was calling the shots, that's why. So it was, at the time anyway, that was a good thing. I wanted to ask you, G, again, you lived in the southern tip of Florida. You lived in, you know, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. When you were watching Florida in the early 80s, you know, 80, 81, 80, like around this time when you were, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, do you remember, like, how far out, like, how much Florida the Grahams covered? Like, I know they did a lot of Tampa Armory. I always hear that. Did they go into the Panhandle or?
The Panhandle, you know, up there, like, say, in, like, the, you know, Destin or all that. That area and that part of the state, you know, close to like Alabama, that was the, you know, Gulf State or the Continental, mm-hmm.
Yep, Gulf Coast. Yep.
The Fullers, Gulf Coast, where Arn started his career.
Yep.
That was up there. But other than that, they covered really the whole state of Florida. Other than that, I mean, they mostly, in the big area, they had Tampa, they had they had Miami, they had where I used to go see them in Sunrise, Florida, in Sunrise Musical Theater. So they did shows there. They did sometimes at the there was an armory in Fort Lauderdale sometimes that they did. They did cover Tampa. They did cover Lakeland. You know, for the most part, they covered everywhere. They would do Jacksonville from time to time. You know, it's a large state, so a lot of driving. But, they covered most of the state. But, it's funny. When I watch some of the shows now, I'm like, I love championship wrestling from Florida. It was awesome. And then I look at it sometimes, I'm like, what did I like so much about it? Sometimes some of the shows, I'm like, they really weren't that good. Right. But I guess when Chad was saying, he changed his mind on the Steamboat matches, Steamboat Flair matches. Because, as you watch things, as you get older, you have different points in your life and you rewatch, it's like reading a book that you read maybe when you're younger and then you read it and you get a different perspective. Well, I think the same thing happens with wrestling. I think you get a different perspective for certain things that you may watch over and over. Or how many times do you watch a movie and you catch something you didn't catch the first time around when you watch it again? So I think it's the same thing that comes with wrestling. Like, there's certain things I still love about championship wrestling from Florida, and then some things I'm like, really, I like that? Or same thing we think about WWF, back in the 80s. Some of the stuff we're like, wow, this stuff was kind of corny, but we loved it when we were younger. So it's just a matter of perspective and mm-hmm. where you are in your life at that time when you're watching it or reviewing it.
So what you're saying, Chad, this is new to me now. So Barnett didn't cover the entire state of Georgia? Like, the Augusta area had like its own mini territory?
Well, so he was like overseeing it, but the local promoter, like on the ground floor, the biggest one is Tom Bell, Tuesday nights in Columbus. They ran in Columbus on Tuesday nights at the Columbus Auditorium. Tom Bell was the promoter, and that's one of the kind of holy grail tape footage stuff, because there was a lot of rumors that he was recording and had all of those Tuesday night shows just sort of hoarded somewhere.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
It's never came to light, and they've kind of went with the family and asked, because if you remember the story for Georgia, for the most part, was that Ole was the one taping it over for next week's TV, or the next big show was just taped over mostly by Ole when he was around. So, Barnett was still calling the shots, but they just had a greater reach in that they were on a loop. And, that's the thing with Houston. It was, they ran some smaller spot shows that you could see if you look at their cage match profile. But, it was really big. Like, every Friday night, they were weekly in the Sam Houston Coliseum. So
that was
a weekly stop and a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then he interviewed Andre, and then, he interviewed Harley, who was champ at the time, 1980. And when I was looking at the title history, which kind of got me to figuring out when this was, that card, Chad, I think Mark Lewin actually beat Gino for the Texas heavyweight title on that card. And then I think Gino won it back, like a month later or something.
Let me look at the 622 card real quick.
Look how far back Mark Lewin goes, G. He was one of your boys in what was it, the Purple Haze, or what the
Purple
heck was
Haze.
That? Well, he was the Purple
That's
Haze.
How I know him, but he was older by this point. He had been wrestling, I think, since like the 50s and 60s.
He was still fucking huge. He was ripped, not ripped, but he was in pretty good shape in the early 80s, because they showed up in Mid-South in like 82, 80, early 83, Kevin Sullivan and Mark Lewin for a short time. Or not Mid-South. I think Crockett. Was it Crockett? Now I'm confused. One of those three. It was either, because I've been watching them. It's either Crockett, Mid-South, or World Class. Kevin Sullivan and Mark Lewin had showed up briefly. I want to say it might have been World Class, but I'm not sure. But I was looking, trying to look for these Houston cards. I don't think Landy and Graham have them on History WWE. Where are you finding them?
No. So I've been using Cage Match, and it's not the easiest. I'll tell you probably the easiest way to do it is to hone in on just the Sam Houston Coliseum, and then filter on the year. So
yeah, that's probably the best.
So because Houston Wrestling is the name of the event for everything. Like there is nothing really there as far as the promotion. They consider it. It's called Gulf Athletic Club.
Yeah. Yep. That's the company that's what Bosch bought from the Seagulls. So yeah.
So that's what it's labeled as, Cage Match, and that'll get you everything. But I mean, it's interesting to go through. I mean, like, you know, in the hype for the Harley Race versus Mil Máscaras match, they talked about the last time they fought, it was a disqualification. Bosch says, you know, there'll be no disqualification this time, but if you look at the results of that match, it ended in a double count out. So, you know, another completely like schmoz crap.
Oh,
finish.
Yeah.
But that's kind of just the way it was around, man.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's really what I wanted to kind of chat about tonight was Houston Wrestling. The NWA YouTube channel put a nice clip up. But again, if you want to check it out, it's about 91 minutes. And it's these two matches and then a bunch of like local commercials with these guys in their half button down, you know, leisure suits and selling stereos. I was waiting to see like Jerry Reed sitting in the pickup with Fred pimping Coors or something. But so anyway, check it out. Houston Wrestling. It's a good little tidbit. It's on the it went up about a couple weeks ago. Every Tuesday at 6:05 when NWA would normally post Power. Obviously, that's suspended for the moment. They're posting different stuff, and we're going to talk about our topic next week. Is awesome. I've been waiting for this to be posted. Now it's posted, so the doctor and I are going to do it next week. Chad, thanks for coming on. Again, your time is precious, means a lot to us, and I don't get to be on with you nearly as much as I used to, and that bugs me. So it was great to have you on tonight. The other thing I want to talk about quick, because the doctor and I in a couple weeks are going to hop in on this as well. I've said this on both the Place B podcast with JR and this past week's episode, which is up right now on the Place to Be Wrestling Network and PlaceBNation.com. This week's episode of Main Event with myself, Nate, and Steve. Of the long form stretch projects that we've done here at Place B Nation, the WWE wrestler, greatest WWE tag team, greatest WWE match. This one we're doing for 2020. That'll be released in 2021. The greatest WCW match, I think, has gotten the most juice from so many fans. I mean, Chad, you're doing stuff. I got the doctor finally maybe starting to watch matches with me. We got content up the wazoo on our feed and your feed. I've never seen the love and support and juice as a wrestling fan for this project of the greatest WCW match. I think it's two things. Number one, because of what's going on in wrestling right now. Nobody, like you, Chad, nobody wants to watch empty arena stuff anymore. So they're hopping on this bandwagon, which is awesome. And number two, I think it's because it's a finite swath of like examples. With WWE, I mean, you can go as far back as God knows, you know, 1963 technically to now. Whereas here, you're pretty much going from 1981, when Crockett kind of slowly started to become national, mostly regional, but jumped into national, till of course WCW closed up shop in 2001. So you have 20 years of matches to get out of 100. And I'm just stunned and amazed at the support and the excitement that fans on our Facebook page and us as podcast talent is jumping in and doing stuff. So in a couple weeks, in 2 weeks time, we'll promote it now, Dr. G. In 2 weeks time, for as long as the current NWA, the Corgan NWA, is on hiatus due to this, due to the fucking virus bullshit. The doctor and I are going to talk about two matches from the, now we're just going to do, because we are an NWA centric show, Dr. G, we're just going to talk about 81 to 91. Not the Nitro era. That's strictly WCW. But from 81, you know, Crockett, till 91 when you know, and Chad, you remember this, when Flair and Fujinami had the whole belt split thing. So right around there. So from 81 to mid 91, the doctor and I are going to focus on for the next several weeks, starting with 2 weeks time. Cause we got a special topic next week. So we're going to talk about some matches that I may have on my ballot and doctor may have in his ballot, because you're doing a fucking ballot, whether you like it or not. But what I really want to promote tonight, is Chad's podcast Blast Cast over on the No So feed that I'm in love with. Now I want to promote, talk about the one pod you do, Chad, that isn't related to this, but it's still pretty awesome. And it's called Spirit of 06. Tell everybody what that's about, because I heard the first episode and I loved it. And I think everyone else will too. Tell us what you're doing.
Yeah. So that one, that's actually a thing that's kind of ballooned on me. So this Wednesday should hopefully be the second episode of that. I've got to record it, but basically I just, you know, with this, I was like, well, let me think about a random year that I don't think's been discussed too much. And, I picked what I think in most people's opinions is one of the most maligned years in WWE history in 2006. But as I started, you know, like fleshing it out and thinking about it, it's one of the most like prolific years in Ring of Honor history. It's one of the greatest years in TNA history, which kind of is an oxymoron, but you know, there's still a lot of good stuff in 06. I know, right? And also very important for like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Chikara, some of these other promotion, indie promotions, and getting kind of a small footprint on the U.S. scene. So I won't be talking about just U.S. wrestling in 2006. And I'm hoping with the episode on Wednesday, you know, I'm going to be time stamping what I'm discussing. But I mean, the episode on Wednesday is a big hodgepodge where we have a SmackDown with Eminem versus Batista and Rey in the cage. It has a Impact. Sting's about to debut in TNA. There's a PWG show, and then it's also New Year's Revolution from WWE. So it kind of encompasses a whole ton of stuff, but just That's strictly awesome. U.S. wrestling for the year.
That's fantastic. So check that out over on the No So feed. Spirit of 06. Great show. The first episode you did, that first Raw of 06, and I loved it. It was awesome. But the other one I wanted to talk about that's more kind of centric to our show here is a show you're, and I love the title, by the way. Please tell me you gave, I don't want to give JR credit for it. I want to make sure that you
that title. Now, so Fighting Spirit of 06 was Justin, Carolina Dreamin' was all me. So,
okay, good, yeah. Good. I like Fighting Spirit of 06, but I'm glad Carolina Dreamin' is yours. I love that title. Carolina Dreamin'. So tell everyone what that is, because that kind of goes in line with what we're doing here, but I heard, listen to the first episode, and again, it was awesome. Tell everybody.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a great complimentary piece for what you and G are going to be doing here, and also what you're doing on the main event. So with Carolina Dreamin', I'm mainly going to try to focus on the TV or arena handheld footage stuff that's in consideration for the GWCW project. Like Scott said, I think the dialogue and the excitement level's been great so far, and I think a lot of that is just a new sense of discovery. So I was hoping to dive into that, and already I've discovered some matches that either I hadn't seen before or really hadn't paid as close attention to as I should have, like the Boogie Jam hour-long draw, and it's made me definitely appreciate them more the second or first time through. So that's going to be focusing on, and that'll actually – just with the way it works, I'm mapped it out, and it'll run after the project's done. But I'm hoping to keep those shows in kind of pod blast, bite-sized format, 30 minutes or so, and kind of focusing on two or three matches at a time.
As a matter of fact, I have a little list here, and if you may let me indulge, Chad, I want to share it with Dr. G because I think he loved the list. There's a master list that we're not revealing. I wonder if I could do it since you sent it to me. I guess I could. I'm going to share with you. I'm going to share with you, Dr. G, but we're not sharing with everyone. It's just a list of matches. But the two matches that you did in episode one, we talked about them before. One was the Boogie, right? Well, let's see. You know, one was, what was it, Ole and Rick?
Yeah, Ole versus Flair. That was from 1981. It was a strap match. So that was an interesting match just to see kind of your standard house show tag match or NWA championship match from that era. But then the main one, I think, on that show was the Briscoe versus Piper studio match with the promos and everything. Just a beautiful piece of TV.
What's the date you have on that, Chad? Because that episode
July,
was on the network.
Yeah, so July 7th, 1982. So
yeah.
7-7-82.
I watched it. It's an unbelievable match. Gee, we're going to have to watch it. It's an unbelievable match. Classic Piper. For all you like younger WWF fans that may not even have your head wrapped around this, Piper was awesome. First of all, he had the fucking plaid tights, which are freaking amazing.
Yeah, you love
them. I really wish he had the and plaid boots, because that's just Piper. So that show I'm pumped to listen to every week when you have it out, because that's going to be great for me and for those that are building you don't have to build a ballot, just a casual listener who wants to listen to some great wrestling talk about matches that you may have never seen. So Chad's going to open most of his stuff on Carolina Dreamin', right, is going to be stuff that you can't get anywhere else. Like, you're doing non-pay-per-view and non-Nitro, right? Is that your criteria?
Yeah, it's going to be, some of it will be available on the network. Some might require you going to YouTube or the dark web to access. But I think the good thing about this stuff is most of it is either available on YouTube or the network. They're not usually too extreme and cracking down with stuff on YouTube that's not necessarily on the network. So,
right. Particularly if it's on theirs.
Yeah.
If it's non-WWE stuff, I don't think they give two shits about it. I don't even think they really notice. So this past week, which you'll see which is on the feed now, of course, this week's episode of Main Event, Steve, Nate, and I have decided to eschew the New Japan Classic match picks for the rest of the year, because New Japan will be there when we come back. And we're doing WCW. Now, it was my turn this past week, and I picked – I don't know if you listened yet, Chad, but – here are the two matches I picked this week that we talked about. We did the Koloffs versus the Rock and Roll Express from Starrcade 85. Now, Main Event is everything, from beginning to end, from 81 to 01. Only here on our show, the NWA Saturday Special, will G and I only pick matches from 81 to 91 because it's NWA centric. So we did the Koloffs and Rock and Roll Express from Starrcade 85. And we did Dustin and Steamboat versus the Enforcers from Clash 17, right? 17 from November of 91.
17.
What are you thinking about those two matches?
So I was happy you picked those, Scott, and I did listen right before we recorded tonight. And I think what the panel said echoed mostly my thoughts. And actually, I mean, the Clash 17 tag, I know I'm higher on it than almost anybody, but to me, the Clash 17 tag is kind of like the blueprint of a quintessential Southern style tag match. Mm-hmm. So it's just one that I absolutely love and will probably end up in like my top 20 or something. I may end up being the high vote on it. Like, I'm over the moon for that match. Always have been, because it is a match I remember as a kid too. So it does have some sentimental appeal for me as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just a total package.
Yeah. So we'll definitely, so every other week off our TNA Bloodfest that we do the other episodes. So Nate's up the following week, two episodes from now, and he'll be picking a couple. I told him he could pick as much Sting and Doom as he wants.
I was going to say, I guess a lot of Sting.
A lot of Sting and a decent amount of Doom. So check out Main Event. We'll be doing NWA every other week, every other episode, not every other week, every other episode. And then starting in a couple of weeks, the Doctor and I are going to dive into some 81 to 91 matches. And again, with Chad's Carolina Dreamin', more than enough NWA content. As a matter of fact, one of the other gems on Jenny and the Gems, I've been talking to Mr. Drew Wardlaw, and he's been kicking around the idea of doing an NWA-centric pod as well. So just content flying on all of the feeds here. The Place to Be Wrestling Network, the North South Connection podcast. What is it, Chad? Is it Podcast Connection? I'll get it right at some point.
It's a mouthful.
It's the no, like Zoso, like the Zeppelin album.
Yeah.
The No So feed. Great stuff. But Chad's two new pods, Fighting Spirit of 06, and of course Carolina Dream, and I love that. I think you thought of that because I think of the Carolina Shag Sirius XM channel. That's what I think of when I hear Carolina Dream. But tremendous show. Plenty of NWA. That's G's and my little pet project now, pet promotion. And I know Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana are chewing at the bit to get back into business. Chad, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, Chad. Appreciate it.
It will not be your last time.
I enjoyed
on the show,
it, guys.
I guarantee you that.
Sure. Yeah,
it will not be your last
Absolutely.
Time on the show. I can guarantee you that. So next week, before we dive into the matches, though, we got one more thing we want to recap next week. Finally on the network, on the NWA YouTube channel, they finally have released, so we can watch it for free. I was going to buy the DVD, but now I don't have to. Last year's Crockett Cup. Crockett Cup 2019 is on the YouTube channel, and the Doctor and I are going to recap it next week on the NWA Saturday special. So the first match between Nick Aldis and Marty Skrull, as Stu Bennett would say, plus last year's Crockett Cup tournament. So plus I think there were a couple other singles matches too. So next week on the NWA Saturday special, the Doctor and I will recap the 2019 Crockett Cup. And then the week after, we'll start talking some 81 to 91 NWA matches. And because the Doctor, you're doing a ballot. I don't give a shit what you say. We're going to get a ballot out of the Doctor. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Enjoy your wrestling this week, whether it's YouTube, Impact Plus, WWE Network, New Japan Pro Wrestling World, the Dark Web, Chad Web, whatever
like
you got.
That. I like
it's
that,
all,
the dark
it's web. All the Dark Web and the Chad Web. Thank you, Chad, as always. I am Scott. He's the Doctor. Or not.
Chad. Yeah.